Hey, Rugby Rant fans, I'm the big guy, Scott Ferrara, and we're here with episode 178, inching ever closer to Rant episode number 200. That's Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt, our buddy down the corner there, James MLR Stats Dilly, and a newcomer. We've had a lot of newcomers this season, and we're glad to actually have somebody from San Diego come on and chop it up with us. Trent Adams, AA, how are you, buddy?
Hey, good to see you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, of course.
Hey, listen, Scott, before we move on, I got to throw a lot of props to AA. I mean, this dude, we've been saying, hey, put your money where your mouth is, fans. If you want to be on the show, put up or shut up, join in, drop us a line, send us a note. And AA sent me a note and said, hey, I'm going to step it up. I'd like to come on the show, and we made it happen. So big kudos to him, man. He's willing to put his money where his mouth is. Come on the show and join the Rant. We love it. We love fresh blood. And our first member of the San Diego Legion fan base to join the show.
It only took us about 5 years, but, you know, we got it done eventually.
Well, and I'm wearing, in honor of the city jerseys, I'm wearing last year's city jersey, which was Luke Green's number 3. So a nice front row prop jersey that I got as part of this city auction last year. So for those of you who are out there interested, go out and look at those city jersey auctions that are out there. Very, very, very good merch and very authentic. It's got like the GPS pack in the back and everything.
Although not for San Diego, because they didn't bother this year.
Wow. Scott's fired from the Great White North.
I can't even comment on their jerseys this year. Their jerseys this year are there's no words for them. You go off
I like the Legion generally.
Year. I don't even know what that is. So.
But like the whole jersey situation this year is really, really bizarre. Like they launched it and they specified that it was a military series one. But now it's just their normal jerseys, and everyone was like, well, is it the normal, or are we waiting for one? And then they didn't bother with the city ones. Don't know if there's a mess up in the back end somewhere or what, but it doesn't seem like it.
You got to wonder if they're going the way of Dallas, though, right? I mean, we didn't see anything coming out of Dallas here. We thought Dallas, choked their chicken as well, and then they came out with that really what I thought was to be a really nice-looking Texas theme.
It was.
It's not city, but it's Texas-themed, and you know, the marketing makes sense, right? You know, they're trying to capture some of those former Austin Gilgronis fans that perhaps are
looking
for a team to support, and they're, you know, repping the state. And we know that Texans are very proud of where they come from. So it makes a lot of sense. And I thought the jerseys looked fabulous.
Absolutely. But yeah, you could check out to see if they're still available through the website to place a bid. Or you can go purchase one if you don't want to bid on a game worn jersey through our people over at shopmlr.com, powered by our buddies over at Rugby Now. Yeah. And before we get into anything else, we're going to get to Around the Pitch.
Use that.
And as I rudely interrupted James while he was trying to give you a code to get 10 to 15% off, James, what is it? It's MLR Stats on...
MLR Stats, all caps, at checkout for 15% off.
There you go. Listen, no free ads. I have to make you work for it. Listen, no free ads. I have to make you work for it. But as is, we're going to give the guest the opportunity to give his Around the Pitch. Trent, you're up.
Around the Pitch has to go to a shout out and congratulations to the U-20 USA Eagles taking down Canada. I believe the aggregate score on that was 74-39. So a very well-deserved win for the USA Eagles. For those of you who had a chance to watch it, or if you were able to find those elusive YouTube streams that were out there, you got a chance to see a team that could really, really move the ball around the pitch. That being said, there's going to have to be some changes made and some upgrades made to the front row to get the scrum going the right direction, because they were on roller skates for most of the two games. So best of luck to all of the U-20s as they get back to practicing here this week and get ready for the under-20s trophy, where they'll be competing against a number of teams over in Scotland.
Awesome. Yeah, congratulations. And, you know, it's good to see the young guys out there playing. And, again, you talk about elusive YouTube streams. They finally got it figured out. But, again, you know, me and Hammer and our buddy Rick Collins talk about production of the pro, you know, professional type in MLR. And the U20 seems to have, as much as it had an issue, it still had better production value than some of the MLR matches this season. So it's a little bit crazy to me. But anyway, MLR stats, James, you're up.
Yeah, I'll come around and just dump a few milestones that were hit around MLR this weekend. So Jason Robertson of Old Glory DC became the third player to pass the 100-point mark this season. He also passed 100 successful kicks in MLR. He's got 103 out of 145. That's place kicks for the post, 4 points. That's just above 71%. He's the first DC player to pass 100 successful place kicks. There's a couple of debuts as well, which at this point in the season is quite rare. We had Brandon Harvey makes his MLR debut for the Legion and Noah Bain for the Utah Warriors. The Utah Warriors, speaking of, became the third team to pass 2,500 points scored all time in MLR behind San Diego and Seattle. And that's about where the good stops for the Utah Warriors, I'm afraid. They were part of the highest scoring game for the season in 2024 for 96 points as they went down 68-29 in Seattle. That is the highest scoring game in both Seattle and Warriors history of all time, and the third highest scoring game in MLR history for 97 points, like I said. And because of that massive load of points, Seattle were the first team to pass 400 points on the season.
Man, throwing darts against Utah, man. Those Warrior fans might be coming after your throat there.
That's fine. I mean, they don't have much to cheer about. I can give them an outlook.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I think
he's doubled down.
Yeah, I mean, between no Toronto, between he's wearing the old Atlanta jersey. I think James is just a little... Yeah. Well, hangry for an MLR team.
Yeah, right. Representing the zombie nation or the dead teams.
I love that. I love that. Hammer, what do you got?
Yeah, some interesting news. It just kind of came out today, and it did fly below my radar. MLRPA reps were announced, and so it was interesting for two reasons. First, like I said, the reps were identified from each team, which I'll address in a second. If we reel back, remember that last summer the Players Union filed with the NLRB, and we really didn't think that anything was going to be made of it. But on January 26th, the union was recognized, but it was recognized. It was basically the USRPA, as we know, is largely made up of US Eagles players from both men's and women's 15s and 7s side. But now we have an actual union that represents the entirety of the players union in the MLR with the MLRPA. And the reason this is significant is because, you know, of course, not all players in the MLR are members of the USARPA. Okay. So we're talking about domestic players from Canada, and we're talking about international players and those players who are not, you know, have not played for the Eagles. So quick rundown, you got Anthem Av Turnbull with the second person I mentioned, each of these will be the alternate. Josh Shetler, Chicago's Bryce Campbell, and Sidney Shoup. You got Dallas with Sam Gull and Mitch Richardson. OG has Arrow and Mueller. Rejects of Bailey and Scara. Miami is Alec McDonald and Justin Upke DeFoy. Then you got San Diego with Matina and Helu. Noel's Armin and Volani, Seattle's Pedersen and our guy Chango, Utah's Lustique and Mullen, the Cats have Shoemaker and Christian Dyer, and then LA's just one rep with Jason Dom. It's interesting that many of those combos are made up of members of the USARPA, so Eagles, and then there's also many of those are members of Rugby Canada.
Absolutely, and you notice a lot of those guys on that list. Have been involved in this process. Chris Matina, Chance Wengluski, you know, boys with our buddy, my buddy Nick Civetta, who headed that process as he was the rep for USA Eagles Rugby Players Association. And, you know, a lot of those guys, the Americans involved, are involved on the international side as well. So it's good to have those guys who are experienced and then younger guys like Alec McDonald showing up there. You know, Alec, has gone from per diem to a full-time player. So I think it's good to have a little bit of insight into what per diem players face, especially when you're going into a new bargaining unit.
Right. 100%. Don't forget, if anybody wants to check out a past episode, Scott and I did one live, not live, but we did it from Dogtown prior to the Rooney or the Ironworkers versus Hounds match last year. So you can check that out. Chris Mattina was on that one along with the Cowboy.
And we also have a prior one prior to the kickoff of the season with Nick Chavetta speaking about speaking about this particular topic. He's going to come back on probably after this season and give us an update. Now it's my turn, my around the pitch. We're going south of the border. We're talking the Super Rugby America's semifinals. You had Las Pampas eliminate the prior champions, Peñarol. Pretty much the whole match was Las Pampas. The Argentinians, you know, were leading after 16 minutes and just kind of took it away. There was no second half response really from Peñarol. So because of that, Las Pampas is going to host it in Buenos Aires. And then the other semifinal actually went into sudden death, went to the 87th minute. It was tied 14-14 well into the second half. And Doggos won with a penalty kick in the 87th minute from, who was it? Juan Bautista Baroneo. There we go. I'm having trouble. That baby brain, fellas, it's just, it's killing me. Anyway, we're going to see an all-Argentinian final in Buenos Aires next Saturday. It's going to be up on YouTube. Go check it out. It's good rugby. So really, we're going to have, what, four rugby matches on FS1 and then, you know, this final on YouTube for Super Rugby Americas. It's going to be a great weekend of rugby. You know, again, we encourage people, obviously, you know, we're North American centric here, but we do encourage people to watch Super Rugby Americas, especially, you know, considering we do have the Raptors in that competition, and take a look at what other nations are doing as far as their professional teams. Luckily for them, being in South America, they can really just take the Los Pumas and kind of spread them over two teams and continue to have success and not break up the synergy like unfortunately it does with the Eagles and MLR. But you know what? Can't complain because we also have a rugby, you know, professional rugby league here, right, guys? You know, what are you going to do?
Have any of you guys ever been down there at all to Argentina?
I have not.
No.
I got a chance to go for the first time this spring. Let me tell you, you drive on the north side of Buenos Aires, there are rugby pitches everywhere. It's like football is here. I mean, you drive down the road and you see rugby pitches. If you're at the famous cemetery where Evita is buried, I mean, right across there, you go to the next park over, you see rugby posts. So you see them everywhere. And there was a club that we visited, San Isidro Club, rugby club up on the north side. Oh my gosh, I think they probably had 15 rugby pitches up there. It's fantastic. I mean, you can see why they have such a depth of players just with just the amount of pitches that they have and the availability of the game. So it's no surprise that they're able to produce two and apparently a rumored third Argentinian team on the north side of or northern part of Argentina. Mm-hmm.
Well. Yep, I've heard that as well. So we're going to talk about rumors. Now, I'm going to give everybody the disclaimer. We rarely talk about rumors here. Usually when we're talking about topics, me and Rob have vetted, you know, some information and we know certain things. But this particular one, we are going to talk a little bit about rumor of a certain director of rugby operations maybe not being with us next year for a certain team. Before we get into that rant, let's hear from our sponsors.
When we pick up the ball, we also pick up a legacy. A legacy that stretches beyond your current team. A legacy built on the backs of those who came before you with hard work. And for those who will come after you, we promise it won't be easy. But we'll be there, supporting you on and off the field.
So, like we said, we're kind of talking about rumors. It's weird.
Is it a rumor if a South American rugby magazine actually publishes it?
You mean South African?
South African, you're right. Well, sorry. Well, we're
talking about I get a little confused. Listen, if we publish something, is it necessarily true? I mean, let's be honest. Like I said, we normally vet our information, and we're not going to put something out there we don't know and trust. But sometimes we see some of these things from different publications, and they kind of catch on our radar. And this is from South African Rugby Mag.co.za, and it says Heineke Meyer has confirmed his desire to take up a coaching role in South Africa when he returns from his stint in the U.S. at the end of the year. Obviously, he is the director of rugby for the Houston Sabercats, and also has taken the coaching reins in 2020, where he took the coaching reins in 2022. Apparently, he told, let's see, I'm trying to see a name here because I know he spoke to somebody.
It's the original article was from it was in South Afrikaans, I think, so it's barely translated from report, I think it said.
Well, I believe whoever he spoke to, he confirmed that he will be returning to try and return to South Africa and hopefully take up a coaching role somewhere in South Africa in his return.
So speculation is fun. The only thing he confirmed is he wants to return to South Africa.
Exactly. It doesn't say that he has a spot in South Africa. We don't generally deal in speculation, but we want to talk about it because of the nature of Major League Rugby. And especially since we have a San Diego Legion fan on, we want to talk about, you know, we love having the fans of opposition kind of poke fun a little bit. No, I'm joking. But having formed opinions on even if it's speculation. So, Trent, what do you think if Heineke leaves, you know, what do you think the transition is like for Houston?
Well, I think there's a couple things to think about. Remember that Heineke is really serving the director of rugby role, and Poti Human is really serving the head coach role. So I guess the question is does he stay? Because, you know, Heineke's obviously been involved in roster construction, some of the pieces around that. But is he involved? And what I read a few places was that he is not as heavily involved in the game planning and some of the setup there in terms of the actual day-to-day getting the team ready to play. So, you know, I think obviously being a San Diego fan, you know, there's been a long rivalry against Houston. That being said, as an American who cheers for rugby, I look at what Houston's done. I look at the HTX program. I look at the way that they've built their own facility and the number of events that they hold down there. And I do cheer for Houston to be successful long-term. And when I saw that they brought Heineke Meyer and Poti Human as their senior leadership, I was really excited to see them potentially turn the corner. And obviously this is a step back. But I think at the same time, if they can continue with some of the staff that they have there, I think that they still have the ability to grow the program that they've already built and continue to build on the same style of rugby that they're playing, which is a very South African based style with, you know, strong set piece, strong rolling balls, and then, you know, a large, very agile, very physical forward pack. So hopefully long term that, you know, this does not cause a major reshuffle, or if it does, they find a way to continue to build up the level of players that they have and continue to have that sort of South African style, because I think it really suits the type of players that they have there. And you see some great American players that they've been able to bring through now, right? You've got Emmanuel Albert, who's playing great down there. Ronan Murphy's playing outstanding down there. Christian Dyer is obviously a huge asset no matter where he'd go, but certainly has really, really earned his spot and really made a mark in MLR being down there and playing underneath them. And you have to admit that when you're playing under a guy who was a head coach of a World Cup participant team in South Africa, you know that they're getting the best quality of coaching, the best quality of direction. And so, you know, I think everybody wants to see Houston continue to be successful, regardless of the rivalry they have with San Diego or Seattle or whomever in the West.
See, I wanted you to be like, fuck Houston, fuck Meyer, you know, have fun with it. No, I'm joking.
I have different words for Utah, but I think you look at the investment that Houston's had, and you have to credit that ownership group down there for what they've done.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if he leaves and the South African contingent of the administration leaves, I think their setup as far as rugby will help them, because it's a very similar style to what Scott Lawrence does as far as having a good mobile pack, you know, rolling maul, you know, nail down the set piece and then have free throw flowing, you know, pill out the back there. And because of that, you can have a lot of guys transition that are American Canadian into that setup and do very well. You know what I mean? So even if you had a lot of the South Africans maybe leave as a contingent, I think you can plug in some players and still have the success because it's already kind of set up there.
Agreed. Yeah. And I mean, I think that you look at the young guys that have come through and some of the guys mm-hmm. who come out of their academy that have signed contracts, both with them and other clubs. I mean, they have now built the pipeline that I think we wish every single MLR club would have, which is this type of pipeline of players who are coming up, getting in a system, you know, earning their stripes, so to speak, through the academy, and then moving into their senior team. And I think that's going to be one of the things that you look at other places, and I'll poke at Seattle since as a San Diego fan, I am not a Seattle fan. And you look at what academy do they have up there? I mean, where's their development pathway? We all know that Central Washington's brought through huge numbers of guys. And you look at some of the best, some of the top players, top people who've come through and represented the Eagles have come out of Washington. And yet Seattle has effectively no development program. They don't have an academy. They could, they should, but they don't. And so, you know, you look at that and you say, they're just up there kind of putting forth a professional team. Houston has built a pathway and a treadmill that is creating both better professional players and also Eagles and future Eagles that are on the road. So I think that's, you know, that's where you hate to see the sort of disruption to that flow. At the same time, you know, they've got a really good coach there, Pote Human. He has a long track record. I mean, he's been coaching since, I think, the late 90s. He was a head coach of the Bulls for a while, the Blue Bulls, the Griquas. I mean, he has a long and extensive pathway. So if he also leaves, that's obviously a gaping hole. If he stays, which it sounds like he's happy, it seems like there's good traction for him down there, then I think there's a good chance for the pathway and the treadmill to continue.
Absolutely, and I think you're right. And you know, we talk about academy, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. You know, New York had a very good system where they were using their D1 club teams as the pathway to get on a Rooney roster. You know, having three Division I club teams is nice. A lot of places don't have that. So, you know, instead of making, while they had an academy, most of their players were coming from the D1 scene and then jumping on the senior team. Their academy was a lot of under 20 guys who would get shots later in the season versus getting them ready to have an impact right now. But again, several ways to skin a cat. As long as it's successful, that's all that matters. James, what do you think about these rumors?
So, obviously, it's a 2-year contract. Maya came in 2022, and even one thing that's mentioned in this article is my strong point is to turn teams around. And you look at where Houston, the Sabercats, were in 2021 and prior, they were really, really struggling. Pretty much season in, season out, they were struggling to put together wins, put together results, and it's completely changed in 2 years. Maya's 2-year stint has been, well, I don't want to say completely successful. We'll see what the playoffs hold this year, but it has been a complete turnaround. It's a completely different side. It's a really, really well-run organization. As Trent was saying, the pipeline's really coming together now. You see the likes of Seth Smith, just to highlight one of these guys. He was, I think he was playing for the USA U-20s. But he's had a monster season already. It's going to be hard from the sound of things, when Meyer leaves. As a few of the other guys have already touched on, it depends how much of that framework and how much of that staff he takes with him. But I have a feeling that he's probably established that framework to allow it to continue without him. Now, on that comment of this quote, my strong point is to turn teams around. I like to take teams that are down. And another comment earlier in the article, he said a couple of international teams have already come calling. I'd be more than happy if he came and decided to try and rescue Rugby Canada. I'd be very happy with that. But it sounds like he wants to go back to South Africa in some capacity.
Yeah, you know, again, I think that goes back into the systems in play is essentially a plug-and-play system. If you can find, a director of rugby and a coach, assuming Pote leaves as well, that has that same philosophy. Again, I think a transition will be easier, but you know, it also depends on what's out there and what you can attract to get for a coaching style. You know, it's not that easy.
You have to assume that Maya and probably Pote Human as well have put in place guys that share the same philosophy and share the same kind of idea of how the system should work. So I wouldn't be surprised if they try and recruit from within. Maybe, I don't know if Pote Human has any interest in director of rugby at all. Trent was saying he's a very, very experienced coach. He might just be happy sticking with that. Human could move up and they recruit a head coach from within. No idea, but that was a way to guarantee that those new pieces would share the same philosophy that Henneke Meyer does, or they might choose to, you know, Meyer might be able to recommend someone from outside who's got a bit more experience to come in and take the reins. We'll have to see.
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, this league right now is about transition, right? And we have transition of ownership, we have deaths of teams, we have rebirths of teams. And I think as we get there, you know, I think you're right. I think the transition that they made as an organization to kind of level up in what they do and bring a more professional environment there is what has helped them in the last season and this current season be where they're supposed to be at as far as where they want to be, you know, winning matches and things like that. And now what that does is now that takes all those guys on those teams for 2 years and says, okay, this is what it means to be a professional rugby player at this level. And as those guys disperse or move on to different MLR teams, they take that knowledge with them and say, and give it to the guys that maybe aren't doing that, right? Or haven't learned it, or bring that locker room culture to say, we need to be up here with this, that, and the other, because this is what I learned over here. And I think all overall that'll just make every team better from here on out. Rob, what do you think about these rumors?
Well, I think they're more than rumors simply because they actually quote the man himself, Henneke Meyer. What's interesting to me is, first of all, but even before these were swirling about, it was pretty well known that he didn't spend the off season, and many of the foreign coaches don't. They go home for some period of time, whether it's to New Zealand or Australia or whatnot, or South Africa.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
In this particular case, but I think that's one of the biggest draws for him is because his family is actually based in South Africa. So he goes home, you know, as much as he can, and therefore he isn't spending all of his time here. It's one of the reasons why I like Sam Harris so much. I mean, he brought his family over. They're in Chicago. His kids are going to school, you know, his daughters are going to school in Chicago. And so I think there's a commitment to, you know, what he's trying to build. And I wish more coaches would do that, even if they're coming from overseas. Nevertheless, so I think that's one of the driving forces. He has four kids. He's married and has a wife, and so that's one of the driving forces behind this. I don't know if Pote slapped him at some point when this was announced. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. It would have been great to get that on video because it would have been another, you know, Pote Strikes Again could be a whole movie, whole genre made out of that. But, you know, in all honesty, one of the interesting things is, and I don't put up, yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of stock to Reddit in the sense that you get a kind of a boots on the ground voice, and that's where the rumor does come from. So let me just say, folks, I'm not saying this is true or not true. All I'm doing is I'm saying that there's some Cats fans out there that are a little closer to the bone. And they're saying that, you know, my big question was, will to those people was, Will this disrupt the locker room as we head down to that home stretch and get into the playoffs? Clearly, they have to be the favorite. And it's a concern when a coach announces this early. Will it disrupt that synergy that they do have going on? Will it, you know, provide that speed bump or that hurdle that perhaps will put a chink in the armor for other teams to exploit? That remains to be seen. But that being said, you know, there's a question of, you know, what is his relationship and will this disrupt that locker room? Or, you know, conversely, you know, you have to ask yourself, why did he choose to do this in such a public fashion? One reason is he's hunting for a job in South Africa that he doesn't have yet. You know, he could have done this subtly. That's the thing that piqued my interest. He could have done this subtly. He could have had his agent in South Africa reach out on a very down low, low-key way to start hunting for jobs, but he didn't. He chose to go public and talk to a reporter, which means to tell me that, you know, he wants out, and it's a little concern that there's a less of a trust with his players. You know, when coaches and players are close, there's a trust there, and you do things in the right way in order to make sure that relationship is not at all tarnished or tainted. And I don't know that this does this. So it either tells you that it's already tainted, or it gives me some signs that, you know, maybe he's not as concerned about what they're trying to do this season, as he is finding the next gig. And yes, it's critical. I just always have to wonder when something like this happens.
Well, let's put it in perspective. Ali Richardson's an MMA fighter, so if you put Pote and Ali in an octagon, we all know who's going to win. And I think the hesitation after the slap shows Ali as a fighter's fighter, because he was like, I could be doing something right now.
Right.
But all jokes aside, I think, you know, again, I think you're right. It's two different. There's only two ways to skin this particular cat. This has either come as a surprise to everybody, or this has been talked about prior to the season, and, you know, this is just his way of getting it out there. And again, to me, it seems like this has always been the transition plan. And while everybody talks about, oh, the MLR is related to MLS as far as its infancy, I feel like sometimes the coaching and the transition of players to different leagues and what they want to do is more reminiscent to college football, in my opinion. You know, you start at a non-power five program and you look to work your way up, right? And to get those top spots. And this is the same thing in the MLR. You know, you could take a coach who maybe had a couple down years and is trying to, not necessarily relax, but
reinvigorate their career.
Yeah. Reinvigorate their career. Or you have, young guys coming in and doing it for the first time to try and make that next leap into their next position. And that's where we are in the league. You know, I mean, I don't think that's debatable among us as fans. We kind of know that. But yeah, I think, you know, we don't know the inside details. I just find it odd that this did come. The timing was now.
Right.
But, you know, maybe the timing now is, you know, they're sitting pretty over there in the top spot in the Western Conference with, one loss, two losses. And, you know, maybe now's the perfect time to do it. You do it at the beginning of the season and everybody starts to think, oh, God, what's going on? You do it right now, Rob. And maybe they're thinking, well, yeah, it doesn't. Who gives a shit if he's not here next year? Because we're rocking and rolling with him right now.
Right.
So
and the players at this point are playing for one another.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think I'm on the pathway to say this transition probably wasn't a surprise within the organization. I don't think he was going to stay and Pote was going to stay for like this super extended period of time. And as Rob mentioned, you know, his family is still in South Africa. So, you know, that's tough. He is older, but, and his kids are older and everything. So it's not like, you know, as Rob talked about, like the Sam Harris situation or like James Semple, you know, for New York, his wife was pregnant with their first child. You know, he's a young guy. There's a lot of stuff going on and going, travel and things like that, as we all know, if we have kids and been through pregnancy, you know. So I think for Haneke, it's less of, okay, did what I needed to do here, show that I have a proof of concept in taking a team and kind of turning them around in my own way to buy in. Let's get back home and see if we could do something at a higher level, because I've shown I could do it at a higher level. Again, I don't think it's a big secret. He knows what he's doing. He can do it at every level. He's been involved at the highest levels of the game for a long time. So again, I think it's more of just the reinvigoration of his career at this point. So my question would be, guys, so let's say, and I know Trent doesn't want to hear this, Houston goes in and they take the Shield, right? They win the Shield. Pote leaves, Henneke leaves, a couple of the South African players leave. Do you think there's a huge drop-off next year in their potential after the season? Anyway, this is open to anybody.
Has to. Yes.
Yes.
I think a similar parallel can be drawn, and the exit is for a very different reason, but a similar parallel, and interestingly, James is wearing the jersey that represents that. A similar parallel can be drawn between the exit of Scott Lawrence and in this case, Heinicke Meyer, in the sense that Scott Lawrence was a big picture guy. He understood, you know, philosophically, you know, culture, ideas, how to implement a system, how to make the best use of players in that system, what kind of players to bring in to maximize how you were going to play your style and your game of rugby. What happens when Scott, you know, they get to the final? What happens when Scott is forced out? The ATL is not what it was under his direction. And now only under new ownership are they trying to find their footing. So I think that's the parallel. If what you say were to play out, I think that's what we would see.
I mean, go ahead, Trent.
I was just going to say one thing to think about there is it's not just a loss necessarily for Houston, but a loss for the players who are playing in Houston. You think about the way we've seen an Emmanuel Albert, who's from Minnesota, which is where I'm from. I watched his development from going from a Minnesota kid to Lindenwood to Houston, where he's at now. He got dramatically better over the last couple of years under the coaching staff there. And you have to think that if you end up losing those two type of coaches and some of the things that they're bringing to the players that are there, you're hopeful that they're going to go out and bring somebody in, not necessarily of the same caliber, because you can't find a World Cup finals coach, you know, on every single street corner. But you do hope they go out and find somebody who has that experience level, that high level. And I know that, you know, Rob is a big fan of promoting American coaches, whereas I feel like the American coaching scene has frankly been behind everybody, and short of guys like a Scott Lawrence and, you know, a few others who are coming through. I think that, you know, I appreciate like what Nate Osborne's done and how he's grown, but I think we need to continue to import that coaching talent to help elevate the overall ability of our domestic coaches to learn from them and potentially improve to get to the point where they can take over the reins of the teams. But I don't think we're there yet. You know, as a U.S. rugby conglomerate, we don't have that depth necessarily to bring those guys in.
No,
we and don't. And shaking his head.
That's going to be wrong. A long.
No. I was going to say, I don't disagree with anything you said. I think my point is that there's that gap that we just haven't been able to, when we bring coaches in, like a Heinicke Meyer, like a Pote Human, or, you know, you go down the list, you know, we've got Corey Brown down in New Orleans. You know, are we using them to help make American coaches better, to raise that standard? And I think there's that gap that exists. And you know, I don't know how – well, I think there are a lot of ways to cut that cake, but it's something that needs to be addressed so we can improve.
Where would they learn, Rob? I mean, like, where is a guy –
I think my answer, honestly, you can have coaches clinics put on by these coaches, you know, regionally, you raise funds. And I know that there are groups that are doing this, raise funds. Tim Brown is doing it with his organization out in the, you know, out in Virginia. But they're actually, you send those guys over overseas. You know, NOLA has a really good relationship with Claremont. So you send a couple of your coaches that perhaps your budding coaches, you see some promise that want to develop, you send them overseas for 2 weeks or for 3 weeks in those relationships. And we know that, you know, a lot of teams have those relationships with, you know, whether it be Scotland or, you know, some, you know,
We do have guys who can learn it now. I mean, look at our buddy Emil Walton. He's actually doing a series on coaching. You know, NAV7's coach, PR7's coach. He was the academy manager for Rugby ATL before they moved coast, because, you know, he's an Atlanta guy. You know, so I mean, we have guys. Again, is it a robust pool? No. But we have guys like Dave Fee. We have guys like Emil Walton. We have people who have been Tui Osborne, Tiffey. Like, we have people there that can do it if we could branch out and get them to do it, I think, without having to look outside of the United States. But I just want to go back to a point Rob made when he talked about the change in Scott Lawrence. You also have to remember, too, it was a complete change in ownership. And I think that was a big turning point. You know, we know when there's a tumultuous change in ownership, generally we're going to see a decline in the productivity of the team. So I think once we get to the point where ownership is completely settled, these coaching transitions won't be, I mean, don't get me wrong, coaching transition is always big, but I think from an organizational standpoint, if we can get the ownership situations steady, we'll see less of this, you know, tumultuous, oh my God, you know, the world's ending thing when coaches leave.
I don't think, like you guys have been saying, you've been dropping a few names here about various standout US coaches that we have across North America. I think it's going to be, like Rob was saying, they could be hosting these coaching clinics. They could be doing all this. They're not right now. It's very limited and very few and far between where these coaching clinics are. Rob was saying some of them go overseas. Like, I don't think it's going to be until we have US assistant coaches or other staff, front office staff, that have been part of a professionally run rugby organization for an extended period of time. And like, they're going to need that exposure in a professional rugby environment, in a professional coaching environment, to develop professional coaching skills. And that could also apply to, you know, some of these veteran players that have been in the league the entire, well, let's say they're in it until for their whole 10-year career, let's say 2018 to 2028. They're going to be starting to retire. They could be looking towards coaching. They have spent their entire career in MLR. They could go and coach in MLR. I think it's still not quite been long enough to start to see the development of US coaching. And I completely agree with what Rob said, is that a lot of these coaches could be doing more. Whether they can, I don't know. You know, they're busy running professional organizations already. But whether they can kind of, I suppose, endear themselves to the communities which they're coaching. You said Sam Harris has actually, you know, moved his whole family out to Chicago. They're in school there. It shows a willingness to want to be a part of that community, which isn't necessary, but it definitely helps. If we start to see, you know, coaches from abroad starting to do that, then you can start to look at, well, okay, what in the off season are there coaching clinics? Are there anything to develop US talent in the front office or on the sidelines rather than on the pitch directly?
I think, though, you look at a guy like Mike Brown, who's down there as part of the Houston staff, and that's kind of where I see the pathway going, where you do have elite level coaches that are in there, and then staff wise guys like Mike Brown on the staff, and ideally we see those staffs filled out, right? We don't just have one assistant. I mean, you look at a super rugby team or top 14 is crazy, where they either got 8, 10, 12 coaches. But that's the idea, is hopefully we see more of that transition from these players as they retire, who do have an interest in coaching, pursuing their coaching level certificates, and then moving into that assistant role to learn from some of these overseas coaches who are here and taking that knowledge base and moving forward with it.
Absolutely. And that will come with, you know, the league growing. The league growing will improve salaries, improve budgets, improves all of that stuff, and give them a capacity to have a larger coaching staff, which in general will improve that coaching staff.
Well, I think it also comes down to how hard is USA Rugby pushing for American coaches to get their coaching level 3 certificate, because that's the one that, according to World Rugby, makes you the professional, right? That's used to be the L400, I believe. Again, it begs the question, which that could turn into a whole nother rant, as me and Rob have constantly talked about, is where the fuck are their priorities? Because while they want to prioritize being the, you know, the sleeping giant, it's almost like if you ever look at boxing, right, as a sport, right? Take a look at boxing. Every time there's an event, it's like everything must go, right? It's like a It's like, this is a one and done event. There's nobody behind anybody. This is the greatest fight ever. And rugby can't be that. Rugby can't be, oh, we're going to go play Scotland in DC and we're going to put the best lineup we can out there and then not worry about what's going to happen in 2027 and 2031. You know what I mean? And I think you got to start thinking about it now. Look, what do we talk about all the time last year, Rob? What did France do in those Six Nations tournaments when they were blooding all their 20-year-olds? Fucking giving them experience and said, fuck, they said, fuck the Six Nations. We're getting a World Cup on our home soil. Let's become the number one team to get into that World Cup.
And to a lesser level, Italy. I mean, we've seen Italy exactly. reap the rewards from doing the very similar thing, at least in this last
exactly.
Six Nations. So, yeah. And I think mm-hmm. that's where Scott's going with things. But, you know, overall, I think organizationally.
Yeah, but it can't be just Scott. You know, we know that's his vision, but it can't just be him pushing it, you know?
Right.
And that's not a slight on Scott. I'm just, you know.
No. You know, he's already probably spread pretty thin in what he's trying to accomplish right now.
Yep. So, all right. So, final thoughts on if Meyer leaves, guys.
Yes.
It's not a case of if. I think it's going to be a case of when.
He's all but confirmed it. Sorry to interrupt you, Rob. This article all but confirms it. He's not saying he has a job right now. We're not saying where he's going, but the article basically says he's gone.
Yeah, but I've never heard of this publication before, so I can't necessarily say.
No, but I don't read a lot of Afrikaans.
No.
No. See, and this is what happens when Ty leaves the show. We actually have a friggin' an article in Afrikaans,
the one which guy
he could translate. And motherfucker ain't here.
Yeah. Well, and I think the big question is if Pote stays, like Trent said, I think there will be a little bit more consistency and the transition will go a little easier. If he doesn't, that's when things are going to get shaken up. The apple cart will proverbially be shaken up and potentially, you know, the wheels will come off.
Scott, I'm not going to take your job from you because you're a great host. But in one answer, Pote's gone, Heineke's gone. Who do you go out and hire right now, knowing the coaching pool that's out there? Who do you go out and fill that Houston job with? Get one guy. Get one answer, one guy. Rob, you get to go first. We'll put you in the hot seat. Let James pour over some stats quick and come up with a really good answer to trump your answer.
Man, that's a tough one, knowing the pool that's out there. I do think, again, you know, James Semple has showed a willingness to come out here to play for to coach for New York. He does coach a very similar style on all his teams, whether it's women or men's teams. He's coaching. I think he's coaching NPC right now. I forgot who he got hooked up with. So I could see that as a good transition. He's another guy who, now that he has a child, the transition to come over here is a lot easier than having a pregnant wife. He's already been in the league. He's been vetted. Guys know him, so guys will want to play for him. He had a great locker room in New York, by all accounts that I had heard. And maybe one, you know, he's a young coach. He's looking to make some bones and kind of, you know, I know he wants to, I'm sure, again, hit that upper level, but he's a great young coach that plays and coaches this style of team. So, maybe it's my New York bias, but a quick plug and play, if he's available and wanted to come over, I think that would be a good choice.
Honestly, for asking me, one of the people I would seriously consider and take a deep look at is Emile Walton. He's now sevens. He's been sevens focused recently, but he had a lot of success at Louisville at the college ranks. He understands not just the college system and knows a lot of players that have come out of the college system, but he also very familiar with the sevens and with the club landscape as well. So he understands the American rugby club and collegiate culture. And I think having had some conversations with him, he has a very, very deep mind when it comes to analytics and stats and looking at things that can be micro adjustments to improve a system, to improve a team. So he's, you know, cause he's very analytics oriented. So I think that's a tremendous value on his, you know, in his back pocket.
Trent, you have anybody?
I want to hear what James says first, and then I want to go last.
Hey, listen, I'm going to be a cop out, my friend. I don't know the pool in the U.S. well enough.
You're a stats guy. All right, here's mine. Rumored to be up for the Australia job, former Super Rugby coach, former MLR championship winning coach. How about Darren Coleman coming back? Waratahs have let him go. He's obviously has the credentials to come in as the best in the league. We can all argue about how he got to that position, given the bankroll he had sitting behind him, but he has proven to be a successful coach in Japan previously, as well as in Australia. So just a fun name.
And he's another guy who, when he did come over, he was all in about doing his best to stay here until, you know, it hit the fan that I believe was above his pay grade, in my opinion. My point is we've seen the buy-in from him as far as trying to be within USA rugby culture. So I think that's a good answer. And we'll let James do a cop-out here because he is from the UK, living in Canada. And, like, we kind of have him on the show, but he's not really into the Eagles, but he gives us the Rugby Canada's perspective. And I just like busting James as well. He's a good dude. But, guys, I think this is done and dusted. So real quick before we go, if we can get that Super Brew winner up.
Yeah, thank you very much, Scott. Once again, I'd like to thank the lads at Rugby Now, doing a great job. Again, fast delivery of all merch, and they have some fabulous merch that's out. Some people were asking about Miami's gear, and a whole lot of Miami gear, a whole lot of LA gear, and of course, we're seeing the City of Jerseys jump out. So great stuff. But this week's 15 winner, Christina Lanham, as we talk about the Eastern Sabercats, she is a Cats fan, ironically. So she gets a $25 coupon.
Nice.
Stop MLR. And she can maybe buy that beautiful Houston jersey that as I've learned more, it's more connected to the rugby club scene than anybody knew, with that baby blue color. Pretty sharp. I like the looks of it now that there's an attachment to historic rugby in the city. It makes a bit more sense, so we love it. But yeah, congratulations to Christine. And I think we got to do some selections for our locks of the week, Scott.
The Rugby Rants Lock of the Week.
All right, Trent, you're up.
Lock of the week, easy one. New England hosting Utah. Utah has to fly across the country. God only knows who is not injured right now at Utah. England with an easy, easy win and probably covering, I'm guessing, the Lions 7-10.
James, lock of the week.
Yeah, that is an easy one. I think there's going to be two cracking games here between Dallas and Old Glory and Houston, Seattle. Houston defeated Seattle at 42-40 before. That could be a really, really close one. But I think that NOLA are going to be pretty easy, have a pretty easy time in LA against RFC LA, probably to secure that second place in the East.
Gotcha. Hammer.
Yeah, there's I agree. There's some interesting matches. Boy, I was looking at this list. NOLA, I'd love to pick them. I'm just a little concerned. Sometimes they have up and down weeks, but I think they've got it. They made an announcement today. The return of their number eight, Mr. Red from New Zealand's coming back.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, but I'm going to go with Houston over Seattle, and I'm picking this one because Seattle has been devastated with injuries since that very narrow victory early on in the season. And it's for that reason I think Houston is absolutely humming, and they're, you know, ready. They're well-oiled and ready and geared for the playoffs. So, and Seattle's kind of licking a little bit of their wounds right now.
I'm going to go, and I hate to do it, but I'm going New England over Utah. It's more because Utah doing Utah things at the end of the season seems to be their MO. Got to fly to Fort Quincy. They rarely do well on the East Coast. The second half of the season, they're not really, you know, playing their best rugby as per usual. One thing about that Houston match, I believe it's, what, 7 p.m. Eastern. So I'm wondering, are we going to see some of that humidity come in early? And then that second half, that ball is going to be wet, as we've seen that transition happen in Houston at the stadium, at Sabercat Stadium, where second half comes in, and all of a sudden you have a lot of handling mistakes by the away team because they're not used to having that humidity and that that wet ball. But guys, thank you so much for being on the show, Trent. We really appreciate you coming on, and we definitely want to have you back. You know, it's great to have new fans on. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things. We always love having new fans, like we said up front, but it's also great to get a good back and forth going and having somebody who's knowledgeable on the topic. So we really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. It's been an honor to be on with you guys, and always have enjoyed listening and fun to be a participant for once.
Awesome. And as always, James, coming on and taking one for the team last week because I couldn't be around. I always appreciate you jumping in, James, and doing what you do and bringing the stats, brother.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thanks. Well, I'm the big guy, Scott Ferrara. That's Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt. Episode 178, done and dusted, baby.